بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله الكريم. ربنا زدنا علما وفقنا في الدين، أما بعد. Welcome back to session 2 of our seminar today on the fiqh of Islamic financing. And alhamdulillah, we were speaking in the first session about the concept of riba in Islam, and we also discussed some of the prohibition of riba in loans and how it occurs and how it is forbidden for us to participate in the riba-based loans. Now, inshallah, we'll start this session discussing the debit cards. The debit card, as you know, is a card that is given to you by a bank in which you have an account, and it withdraws when you purchase an item, it takes the cash directly from the account, the cash amount that you have. So it's a cash transaction. So the ulama, they allow using the debit card, and because there's no riba involved, and the annual fees on a debit card are also allowed. And also, if there's a service fee for withdrawing your cash from using a debit card, that is also allowed. The problem occurs when you don't have enough funds in your debit account, in your checking account, and then you get one of those letters from the bank that says insufficient funds, and they charge you a large fee. And the ulama, they say that this is not allowed to charge this overdraft fee, because it's a type of riba, where the bank is paying the amount and then they're charging you that amount plus an additional fee. So this ends up becoming a type of riba. And so a person, they should be careful if they use a debit card not to go beyond the amount that they have in their account. And also, which brings us into the topic of bank accounts in general. Is it allowed to have a bank account? And what are the conditions for that? Well, the bank accounts, we have two different types. We have the savings account and the checking account. Usually that's when you go to a bank, they say, do you want to open a savings account or a checking account? Generally speaking, the savings account, it's an interest-bearing account. And this account, where it gives you a fixed rate of return, is not allowed. This is a type of riba, where the bank is using your money to lend to others and then giving you a portion of that profit, a fixed percentage on your amount. And this is taking riba. And as you remember, whether it's paying the riba or taking riba, they're both forbidden by the Prophet ﷺ. So the savings account, even if you say to yourself, I'll take this interest and I'll spend it in a good cause, the ulama, they say you should not get involved in the first place with the riba. You should not support it. But you should avoid it if you can. But if a person happens to have a savings account or happen to get some interest money and he didn't intend it, then in this case he should take it and spend it on public good, on for a masjid or for some public benefit to helping the public, but he shouldn't keep it for himself. And also he should not leave it in the bank. Say a person had an account for many years and then they found out that there was interest accumulating on the account. If they withdraw their base amount and leave the interest for the bank, what the banks end up doing is they give it to the charitable cause of their interest. And sometimes it might even end up going to causes that are not for Islam. You know, in some of the ulama, they found that they use the money, for example, to help some groups to perform missionary work in Muslim countries. So the scholars, they say, you take the money and you give it to a charitable cause where it'll be used for something that will benefit the ummah, but you shouldn't keep it for yourself in that case. About the checking account, this is the account that usually doesn't have interest. Usually. Sometimes they do have interest, and the Muslim should avoid that. And even the checking account, when you put your money in the bank, in the riba-based bank, you're going to use it to make riba. So even in a checking account, it is not, generally speaking, it should be avoided. It is not allowed to put your money in a riba-based bank. Except the problem is, we in living in the West, what do we do with our funds, our money, if we cannot use a Western account or a Western riba-based bank? It leads to a type of darura, because you have this amount of wealth with you, and if you leave it in your house or you don't have a safe place to put it, then it could bring harm to you. It could bring harm to your wealth. And so the scholars, they consider this enough of a durura to put it in the bank for safekeeping. You know, you can put it in the bank for safekeeping, but not in order to make interest from it, but to keep it there safely so it doesn't get stolen or it doesn't get lost in a fire or something like that. The kids don't find it under your mattress. So you put it somewhere safe, and that's allowed. The scholars, they make an exception to the rule. Because generally, if you're putting the money in the bank, even if it's on zero interest, you're still helping them to make riba. And so there is a sin involved in that, but because of the necessity, the ulama, they allow one to do that, to use a checking account. Okay, now we come to the topic of financing. And this will bring us to the brother's question about when you purchase an item, when you go to buy an item, say it's a car or a house, or any item, and you want to buy it, and you don't have the cash up front. So in this case, as you know, you cannot buy it based on a loan, an interest-based loan. But what you can do is buy it on installments. What is allowed in Islam is buying something on installments. And this is permissible according to the four madai. They say that you can buy something and you pay some amount later. Even if that amount is greater than what you would have considered buying it for in cash. This is what the four madai say. Say you want to buy a car and you're negotiating with the seller and he says, if you buy it today, I'll give it to you for $5,000. But if you want to pay over the period of a year, or you want to pay me an amount at the end of the year, you have to pay $5,500. It's up to you. We decide. If we agree, we'll sign the contract. But you're still in the stages of negotiating. The form of that, they say this is allowed for the seller to offer two prices. There are some ulama, they say, no, this is a type of hidden riba. Some of the ulama, they did say that. But that review is rejected because it's not the same as riba. Because this is the profit or the increase in price is agreed upon ahead of time and it will not increase after that. It's an agreement. It fulfills all the conditions of a valid Islamic agreement. You're agreeing. There's no riba involved because you're paying cash for a product and you're both agreeing to it and the amount is known and the transaction is finalized in the one sitting. It's not left open, so there cannot be any further increases. And if a person, they miss a payment, there's no late fee allowed and there's no riba or increase in the transaction. So you see how this is different than buying something on riba. If you buy something on riba, then the final price is not known. And the price could increase based on your delay in payment, and they also add late payments onto the product. And if you're unable or you miss a payment, then oftentimes the bank repossesses the whole item. And this is not allowed. In Islam, if a person, they buy a product, even if it's on payments, the product becomes his, and only the amount that is left to do, only that amount that he was unable to complete payment of, that is what the seller has a right to. He cannot take the whole thing back, like banks do when they repossess a car or a house. So this is the form of dhahib. They allow buying on payments. And this is, you can see that one of the hidden reasons is that it doesn't exploit a poor person, because he doesn't have to keep paying more and more. The amount that the buyer and the seller agree to is known and fixed. There's no multiplication or increase that leads the person to fall further into debt. And so this is allowed to do this. It's allowed to buy something on payments. And the thing that is not allowed is using a third party to buy a product. Like, for example, you want to buy a car, and so the bank comes along and they say that we're going to finance the car for you, and here's the money. They'll give it to the seller, and you take the car from the seller. So involving this third party, is not allowed in Islam. To have a third party finance a transaction is not allowed. You can work out a deal with the seller to make payments, but you cannot involve a third party to give you the financing. And if the bank, if you want to buy something and you want the bank to finance it, if it's an Islamic type loan where they sell on payments, the bank has to buy it completely. And they have to take the risk of buying it until it's registered in their name. And then when they have it, it could have decreased in value, could have increased in value. They possess it, it's their property, then they can sell it to you at that point. And they can sell it to you based on a profit if they'd like to. They're allowed to do that, and you're allowed to refuse the transaction at that point. So it's not involving a third party, it's a separate transaction. And this is actually known as murabaha. Murabaha, and this is how one of the forms of buying a house Islamically is when the investor, he buys the house in cash, he possesses it completely, and he takes the risk of owning that house, and then he offers to resell it to you, and you can purchase it from him on payments or as if he is the owner, because now the investor is the owner. So there shouldn't be an involvement of a third party that's just using the cash for profit, but there has to be the involvement of the actual assets. The party cannot use money to produce money. They have to buy the actual assets and then sell that in order to produce money. So this is an important component in the murabaha. Okay, and also the financing, if you can buy a car with zero APR, for example, if you go to a person who's willing to sell you the car, and they say, we'll sell you this car with zero interest, and you're allowed to do that. However, beware that they don't make any late fees in the contract, because then that would also lead to riba. There's not allowed to have riba, but if you pay it off within the specified period, then you don't get involved in the riba in that case. And also, like we said, late fees are a type of riba, and you should try to pay off on time or find another person who will not charge the late fees. This brings us to a new topic, which is the 401k plan. 401k plan is a type of investment plan. I'm sure if anybody works in a company, they generally offer you a retirement plan, which usually you invest some money from your paycheck and the company matches that amount, or they give you some percentage, some amount. This is called a 401k plan. And then that amount, eventually it's invested for you and you're able to withdraw it when you reach the age of retirement. If you live that long, Allah knows best. If you live long enough to benefit from it. But these types of 401k plans, they give you the option on how to invest that money. They say that they can invest it for you in stable value funds, which are like bonds. And savings bonds, they're exactly what the definition of a riba-based loan. You give the money, they give you a fixed rate of return. People, they can choose that in order to invest their money, but this is not allowed Islamically. Then you can also have what they have, mutual fund-based 401k, where they invest your money in a mutual fund. Mutual fund is when you have an advisor, an investment advisor, he buys a number of stocks in many different companies, and they put that together in a portfolio, in a fund, and they invest your money in those stocks, and you benefit from the profit or the loss of that fund. And mutual funds, generally speaking, very, very generally speaking, they're allowed Islamically. If the companies invested in are halal companies, they partake in permissible types of business. The stocks that are invested, the mutual fund, that the companies that they choose to invest in, if they're for, say, example, communications or electric company, things, oil producing, these types of things that are allowed, then the mutual fund, generally speaking, is allowed. However, if the mutual fund includes stocks in companies that do haram type activities, selling alcohol or gambling or entertainment industry where they do things that are haram, or if it's a bank that uses riba, then these type of stocks are not allowed. And actually, stocks is a very big subject, and Even the companies that you might assume are halal companies, like say a company that sells oil, an oil company, but it could turn out that Islamically the company is rejected. And because there's many other criteria that the ulama look at, they also look at how much money does the company make from interest. You might have a company that is an oil, oil company, but a lot of their assets are invested in riba-based investments, which you can find in their annual report. And so it turns out that if it's above a certain percentage, the ulama will reject it outright. So out of, I believe there was 9,000 publicly traded companies in the US in stocks, the ulama said only 3,000 meet the Islamic requirements. And even of those 3,000, the ulama say that there's a percentage that is still haram in it from the Prophet, because every company has riba-based loans. Every company in the United States. So even those 3,000 companies that which they call the Islamic Stock Exchange or Islamic Mutual Fund, even those companies, the ulama, they say that when you get the profit from those stocks, you have to give a percentage away. And that you can find from the Islamic investment companies, they have advisors that will tell you, this company is halal, but you have to give X percentage from the profit, from your profit away from it. This company is haram altogether. This company. So there's a lot to look at when it comes to stocks. And even the ulama, they say that if you're part of a company, you own stocks in a company, you should even write a letter whenever they have their investor meetings and tell them not to get involved in riba or not to involve in haram activity. It's part of your Islamic obligation. Even though they may not listen to you, but part of your Islamic obligation is to stay away from the sin that they're committing. You should at least voice your concern to the board of executives of the company that you don't want them to, say, merge with a haram company, etc. So, and even some ulama go to the extent where they say any company involved in riba is haram to invest in, which makes it very difficult to use stocks. But the middle view, or the view that that I saw from the ulama, is that if the core business of the company is halal, which means that they don't have more than 5% of their business in a haram activity. Say they produce some alcohol, or they sell some alcohol, but it's less than 5%, like say a company like Walmart, then the ulama, they will allow it, again, with the condition that they don't invest a lot of their money in riba, or a lot of their income doesn't come from riba, and they say you should purify that amount that the company earns from the forbidden. And you should also condemn what they do. If they sell alcohol, you should condemn that to the owners of the company. Because when you buy a stock, you're actually becoming a partner of the company. Buying stocks in the company, you're what they call musharaka in Arabic. You're becoming a partner. You're becoming a partner of the company. So then you bear responsibility for the activities of that company. So for that reason, the person, he has to take steps to avoid getting the sin of helping the company do something wrong or something evil. Okay, so when it comes to the 401k plan, the scholars, they say that the person should try to invest it into a mutual fund, or better than that, is an Islamic mutual fund. And they say that even some human resources departments, you tell them that I'm Muslim and I want my 401k to be invested in the Islamic mutual fund that's managed by some companies like, say, Amana and some other Muslim companies. So they can actually help you to do that, where you can, they might be able to help you to do your investments. And the nice thing about the Islamic mutual fund is they have a board of ulama that examine every company, and they look at what is halal and what is haram. Then you don't have to do that yourself. You don't have to research the companies and find out, is this halal or haram. Here you can see some of the restrictions. The bonds, the 401k that's based on the bonds is not allowed because it gives you a fixed percentage. Any stocks in companies that conduct obscene material, unfortunately there's many companies that do that, alcohol, tobacco, gambling, conventional banks that have riba, casinos, entertainment industry, mortgage companies, musical instruments, etc., these companies are not allowed to invest in. The Islamic Mutual Fund companies will help you determine the companies that are lawful in business, but one should purify the percentage that comes from the haram income from those companies that have that. Okay. We'll go on to, is there any questions about stocks? Easy questions, because I don't want to go into it too much detail at this time.
Yes. Tobacco.
Yes.
So I'm just
Okay, the tobacco company like Marlboro, for example, or those companies that their core business is to sell tobacco, the ulama, they state that cigarettes is haram. In today's, you know, there was a time, even when the ulama, they used in a Hanafi school, some of them said it's makruh tahrimi. And makruh tahrimi, it means something is haram, just like haram according to the other three madahib. But it's a lesser level of haram, because the dalil is not explicit. There's no specific text in the Quran or the Sunnah that forbid it, but it's forbidden because it harms. And the Prophet ﷺ, he forbade anything that harms. La darara wa la dirar. So the harming that's caused by the tobacco, the ulama, they say that it's haram. So even though somebody might say in the Hanafi school, they say makruh. Makruh in Hanafi school, there's two types, right, brother? My brother can tell us now. There's two types. There's makruh tahrimi and makruh tanzihi. Makruh tanzihi means something you should avoid, but there's no sin if you do it. And that's the same as makruh according to the Jumhur. But then you have in the Hanafi school makruh tahrimi. Makruh tahrimi means it's haram, it's a sin. Even though it's called makruh, it's still haram and it's sinful if you do it. And this is why in some of the Hanafi ulama, they classify tobacco as makruh tahrimi. But even some of them now, they revise their fatawa, and most of the ulama, as far as I know, all of them, they say that the tobacco is haram because of it's from the khaba'ith. Khaba'ith are the dirty things. The Prophet ﷺ, he permitted the haram, he forbade the khaba'ith. The al-tayyibat wal-khaba'ith. Everything that we have, all things that we have that are consumed are either tayyibat or khaba'ith. Tayyibat means good and wholesome, and khaba'ith means harmful and bad. So if you ask anybody, what is the effect of tobacco? Is it from the tayyibat? Can anybody say tobacco is tayyibat and it ruins the health and wastes the money and pollutes the body and causes cancers? So the scholars have classified as a khaba'ith, so that a person, he has to avoid the tobacco. But if the company, a lot of questions. Go ahead. Let me finish your question. I think to finish your question, if you work in a company that sells tobacco, but it's not its core business, like a Walmart, again, for example, if it's not the majority, it's not more than 5%, and some of the ulama, they even raise the level to 10%, then they say it's allowed to work for it, but you shouldn't be directly involved in helping people buy that forbidden item. So if you work in Walmart, you shouldn't be the one who stocks the cigarettes or sells the cigarettes. You can work in stocking a different department. You shouldn't be directly involved with it. But if it's not part of the core business of the company, then it's allowed, inshallah. Yes, brother?
How do you suggest late fees be dealt with when
let's
say two companies are trying to sell Muslims are conducting a fair transaction and one is late? Is the only recourse to go to court and to recover the money plus any fee for recovering the money? Is that the only recourse, or is there any other form of arrangement that's halal?
Right. And generally speaking, when it comes to the loans, the Islamic teaching is that to be forgiven. So if somebody owes you money, then Islamically the best thing to do is to let them go if they can't afford it, or to give them more time. But if a person needs to recover the money that he has, then he's allowed to do that, I mean, through the courts, if he has to.
But if you're doing a mortgage, you work for the company, you own the house, and someone's making payments over time, the transaction is
right, right.
And the party just stops paying.
Right.
I mean, court sounds extreme. Is there...
They should try to work out an agreement, and that's part of the Islamic you know, when you're dealing, if the person cannot make the payment, they should try to work out an agreement with the company. Maybe they can sell the house on a mutual basis, you know, whatever, and they can buy a different house, or they can work out a delay in some of the payment. They say, I lost the job. So the company should give them time without charging them anything extra. You know, this is one of the big differences in Islam from the regular mortgage, is that the Islamic company or investor should give more time. This is his, he should not, you know, that's part of his Islamic obligation, is try to accommodate the person in debt. But he cannot take back more than what is owed. You know, he's only, and we'll also talk about in a minute that what's called diminishing musharaka, which means that the company buys the house and you move in and you pay rent for the house and you buy a portion of the house each month. So as time goes on, you own more of the house and your rent goes down and your ownership goes up. And so if you end up losing your job and you can't pay, you still have ownership, equity in part of the house, and the lender cannot touch that. So he should try to work with you. Either you try to buy the rest of it through some other transaction, or, you know, but he cannot charge you late fees or he cannot charge you interest at all. That's how it happens. Yes, Brent? Yes.
The recent financial crisis and other previous financial crises have shown that stocks can lose a large portion of their value, like 30-40%. Imagine that I'm going to retire next year, and I have really invested in stock, then I have the risk that if there's a crisis in the year before I retire, I could lose 30-50% of my savings, lifetime savings. That would lose a lot of hardship.
Yes, you lose out in the dunya, but you gain in the akhirah. You know, because you're doing something, this is as far as I know, Allahu A'lam, but there is a risk always involved in all investments. But what you can do is you can limit that risk by investing in what they call blue chip stocks or companies that are more stable. You can limit the risk, but you can never avoid risk altogether. And I don't know of any specific fatwa on this issue. As far as I know, Allahu A'lam, you know, I don't know of any specific fatwa that would allow it in that case, but Allah knows best. He's saying that if a person in his retirement fund, he's worried about losing his retirement fund, so he wants to invest in something like savings bonds, for example. No, so I don't, you know, as far as what I read from the ulama, is that a person will, sometimes he sacrifices something, but he'll gain with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So, Allahu A'lam. But if you know of any other fatwa, you can go with that, you know, as far as I know.
That's why I asked the question.
No. Necessity, by according to the ulama, I'm going to cover that also, it means harm to life or limb. Harm to life or limb. Because riba is a major sin, right? It's from the mubiqat, it's greater than a major sin. So it's like worse than drinking alcohol or committing zina. So in order to take that, to drink, you know, what would allow you to drink alcohol or commit zina la qadr Allah is only something that would bring harm to your life or limb, cause you harm to your life or limb. There are some opinions that expanded the definition of darura, but the European Fiqh Council, they expanded that definition. But the majority of the ulama, they didn't accept that living in the West is a darura to take riba. Yes?
May I make one comment on this question?
Sure.
One thing that I've heard people have arrived at is as you get older, you begin to move some of your money from investment into gold. So let's say you're going to retire and
you don't have that option in the 401k.
No, well, many parts of the U.S., for example, not do let you money.
No.
You can buy gold.
Yes.
So as you get closer to your retirement, there's less and less risk.
Right.
You know, you have less and less investment.
Right.
And by the time you fully retire, you now have
known
asset of a known amount that you can then you can then manage yourself from there.
Sure. No. Okay. Inshallah. All right, let's move on to the next topic here. Companies, right. Okay, so now buying a house using the mortgage, this is probably something that most of you are interested in. There's two ways of buying a house. There's one is with the loan, the riba-based loan, where the mortgage company buys the house or I'm sorry, they provide the financing for the house, and you take the house in your name, and you're in debt to the financing company, and you pay them back with a percentage of interest. This is the typical riba based loan, which is not allowed. Then you have a type of contract where the investing company, they buy the house completely, and then after they purchase the house, they resell it to you, and this way of reselling it can take place in two ways. The first way is that when the company, the investment company, the bank buys the house, they resell it to you on a payment, on a deferred payment, on installments. And this is called murabaha. Murabaha. And murabaha, one of the key conditions of murabaha is that the bank has to purchase the house completely. It cannot just act as an intermediary or a third party. They purchase the house, they take the risk of you leaving the contract, or they have the risk if the house goes down in value or something happens to it, and they sell the house back to you. Or they sell the house, not back to you, sorry. They sell the house to you, and you buy it from them, and whatever price you agree to. And it doesn't have to be the same price that the bank bought it for. Of course, it's going to be more. But this delay in installments and paying in installments, even if it's at a higher price, that is agreed upon in the beginning of the contract that will not increase, and there's no late fees, and there's no riba, this is what the form of that have allowed. They say this is not riba, because it's something that's agreed upon and fixed, and it fulfills the conditions of agreement of an Islamic contract. So this is called murabaha, the murabaha contract, and this is allowed, and again, the bank has to buy the house first. And then they work with you if you miss a payment. This is, I think, what brother was asking. If you miss a payment, they work with you to help you pay off, but they can't charge you more. And they cannot charge you late fees. So you see how the Islamic law puts a stop to the multiplication of riba that would normally take place. And okay, so this is called murabaha. You might have heard of that before, murabaha. And the other way to buy a house Islamically is that the called diminishing musharaka, which means that the bank purchases the house and then you buy a small part of the house back every month from the bank. You buy a part of the house from the bank and you pay rent on the rest of the house. And you do this for every month. So you make two payments. One payment is towards the rent for the house, and the other payment is to buy part of the house so it becomes yours. So in the first month, you own 1% of the house. By the end of the first year, you own 20% of the house. By the end of the fifth year, you paid off the whole house. You have no more rent payment, and you own the house entirely. So as time goes on, the ownership of the bank decreases, and your ownership increases. And this is called diminishing musharaka, which means your partners in the house. Your partners in buying the house. And I think one of the brothers asked about guidance financial. This is the system that they use to do their Islamic mortgages. And this is generally speaking, I mean, again, the concept is halal, the concept is permissible. But sometimes there's some aspects of the contract that are not allowed, that are haram. And one of the criticisms of the guidance financial is that when the bank or the company buys the house and then they rent it to you and you purchase a little bit at a time, that means that the bank is responsible for the house. They're the owners of the house in the beginning. So they have to pay the insurance or pay the taxes. But guidance financial, they say that no, you have to pay all of the expenses related to the house. You take the risk and the responsibility for the house. And when you have a musharaka in a company, both parties have to share the risk according to their ownership or their stake in the company. So this is one of the criticisms that they have, but the overall concept of diminishing musharaka is Islamic and it's not riba. And that's one of the benefits of this concept. And so eventually you own the house completely. Now the fatwa that was given by the European Fiqh Council, where they said that it's permissible to buy a house via conventional mortgages for residential purposes, for your first house, for those living in the West. This fatwa has been rejected by a large number of the ulama. A lot of the ulama, they have rejected this position, and they say that there's no basis for permitting riba, because the basis for it that was used in that fatwa was the existence of a darura. The darura meaning a great overburdening necessity that causes, that a person losing it will cause harm to his life or limb. So the vast majority of the ulama, they have not accepted this fatwa, and they say that to buy a house in the US, there's no darura. It's not a darura where you're going to live on the street if you don't buy a house using a mortgage. They say there are many alternatives to living in a safe and secure house, which could be achieved by renting a house, or other means. And necessity, according to Sharia, is something that must be done in order to avoid harm to life or limb. That will cause some harm that will come to a person if he doesn't take that necessity. Yes. Checking account or a saving account? Why don't we have to?
Why is the same allowance for purification?
Right. Well, when you're putting your money in the checking account, you're not taking any profit, right, from the cash that you put in the account. So you're not benefiting. You're not taking any benefit from that bank. But when it comes to a company, you're investing in a company, then you're becoming a partner in that company. You're a partial owner of the company, so therefore you're responsible for the things that are done in the company. So if they do have a forbidden income, part of your profit or part of your income is coming from that forbidden source. But when you put a cash amount in a bank, and you're not investing in the bank, you're not a partner with the bank, you're not an owner, but you're just it's as if you're putting your money in a box somewhere, for safekeeping. But you're not becoming a partner with the bank. You're not sharing in their profit, and you're not a partner in the sin that they're doing. Yes, brother?
It's a question
yes.
Regarding the first time when you mentioned something about having a third party involved when you're making a purchase.
No.
Let's say Best Buy, you go to buy a fridge or something. They also have GE as a third party. And for you to be able to purchase that fridge, and you want to finance it. So you think that's haram?
Is there interest on the...
Well, they say, when they talk to you, they say there's no interest.
No
but
interest.
With payment. But
right.
There is a fee that they have to pay. I know a little bit about that.
Right.
So
right.
I just,
yeah, the when you buy a product, if the company is going to finance it for you, then you're buying it from... The GE is going to provide the funding.
Exactly.
And you're paying you're going to pay GE?
Yeah, GE, you got to pay GE. Yeah. But GE pays Best Buy.
Pays the Best Buy.
But Best Buy tells me that there is no interest. But there
right,
is
right.
equal payment or whatever. They have different...
Right, right. I would have to... I have to maybe look at the contract to see if there's no interest involved or, you know, anything else. But you know the prohibition is for the increase, you know, for the riba that they charge. You know, when the third party usually gets involved, they do it for a reason, which is to.
I mean, they don't add anything because if the fridge is $2,000.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Tax, and that's
no. It depends. A lot of these contracts, you have to look at the details of who's providing the funds, and maybe we can look into that, inshallah. Yes, brother?
Pretty much the same question is, would the car dealership advertise 0% interest? You know, you buy a car, they have a lot of products out there that you buy 0% interest.
Right, right.
But the financing, it is not through a third party. You go to a dealership, the dealership is the one that's advertising the 0%. You buy it, the car's $20,000, you pay $20,000 for it at 0% interest. But you're not paying the dealership those installments. You're paying the bank that's funded for that car.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, in Islam, the Islamic transaction has to be between two parties, between you and the owner of the product. So, you know, that's what you have to look at. Are you making a transaction between the bank? Is there a third party getting involved?
Yes.
And you have to...
You want that funds, when the 0% interest is advertised for all car models,
right,
are through a bank, is the one that's provided. The dealership does not provide financing whatsoever. They are the mediator between
right.
the customer and the bank.
Right.
And usually those banks are pretty much like, for example, you're buying a Chevrolet, is General Motors Bank. They're the one that provided that 0%. But they're the one that's paying the dealership for that car. And you pay
the dealership. Does the ownership transfer to the financing company?
Absolutely. Yeah, they are the lien holder on the vehicle. Even at 0%, the title is on their name and your name until the car is paid for, then they look through into the title.
Okay, so the financing company has a lien on the property, but they don't own it.
They do own it. It's their.
They own it.
They
okay, so if the financing company owns it, then you're buying it from the financing company. So then
it's
that
two-party
is.
Transaction.
Right, right. It's really.
It's a two-party
no,
transaction.
No.
It's you and the bank.
Right.
But you're going through a dealership.
No.
The dealership is just the person introducing you to the bank.
Right, right. No. Okay, let's. Maybe we'll save that for the end. We're very short on time, inshallah. We still have. How much time do you have? Can I take another 15 minutes? Is that okay? We'll try to cover everything. I'll do. Very quickly, inshallah, because I know we're over the time already. Okay, so here are some alternatives to conventional mortgages. Generally speaking, in the West, you can rent an apartment, or you can even rent a house, or you can work an extra to try to acquire extra income to purchase a house, or a person can look for a different neighborhood or a different place where their property is available. And we also have, alhamdulillah, we have financial alternatives now to buy houses, and a person can look into that. But in all cases, the Muslim community should try to find a solution. We have the funds in our communities, and we should use that to invest, to help Muslims to fulfill their religious obligations. So these are some alternatives that one can look into. And I believe there is some ulama, the Assembly of Muslim Jurists, they make an exception in very difficult circumstances. If a person has a very large family and he cannot rent a house, he cannot afford the rent of a house, and they look at the circumstances, they might make certain special cases where they allow a person to take a regular mortgage if they're not able to get the Islamic mortgage. But they don't make it as general as the European Council did. They make it very restrictive for very special cases. Okay, now we get to the part for our students here about late registration fees. When you go to college and you're late for registration, or late for class, they charge you an extra fee. And the scholars, they say that this is not riba to register for, because there's a difference between a late fee and a late registration. Late registration means you came late, and they're charging you more because of registering late. But a late fee is when you registered in the beginning and you signed up and they said you have to pay this amount and you got late for it, and then you ended up having to pay more. So then you have to pay a late fee on top of your original fee. But a late registration, it's totally up to you whether you register or not. They're not obliging you to register at all. So that's different, and so it's allowed to register late for a class. Also, this is a very, very important topic, is what happens to a person who took a riba-based loan, but then after the loan, after they found out that it was haram, they want to make tawbah to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Say they own a house, and the house was, they bought it on riba, or they bought a car, and the car was bought on riba. Do they have to get rid of the house, or do they have to sell the car? Or say they're in the middle of the loan, and they found out that they shouldn't be involved in a riba-based loan. Do they have to get rid of the car, or do they have to try to finance their way out of the loan? The scholars, they say, no, they don't have to do that. This is from the mercy of Allah. Whenever a person realizes that he's in a haram or riba-based loan, he should make tawbah. And tawbah has three conditions: to regret to stop what one is doing, which is to stop taking loans in the future. Two, to regret what has happened in the past, to know that he did something wrong. And three is to resolve never to go back to it. So he should no longer take any more loans, and he should stop the loan if he can afford to pay it off. And two, he should have nadama, he should feel bad for what has happened, and he should resolve never to go into it again in the future. If he does this, then whatever he bought, even with a riba-based loan, that money is halal. And there's no harm in him using that car or using that house or selling it. And even somebody who inherits the house, there's no sin on him. As long as he made the tawbah, there will be no sin after that. You don't have to get rid of the money, because the money that he took is halal, although the sin was taking the loan. And this is what Allah says, whoever receives admonition from his Lord and stops taking riba shall not be punished for the past. His case will be judged by Allah, but whoever returns to riba, those are the dwellers of the fire. So to continue to do it afterwards. And a person who is a lender, of course, he has to stop lending the money on riba. He has to stop that immediately. But if somebody's already in the middle of the loan, he's allowed to complete it. He should just make tawbah for getting into it in the first place. No. Okay, and just a few more things here. The monetary gift, when you get cash back on a credit card, for example, or credit for opening a new account, these are examples of gifts. They're not considered riba. They're just extra gifts that you get to attract customers, and you can take advantage of those free gifts. If you buy a box of tea bags and they give you a little something prize in it, you're allowed to keep it. So no problem with that. Also, non-monetary gifts, like when you get mileage for flights, you're allowed to take those. And you can, if there's a raffle, sometimes when they open a mall or a place, they have a raffle for a car, and you don't have to put any money into it, but you just put your name in, and maybe you win the car. The scholars, they say that is allowed. Using coupons, of course, is something that's allowed. And these are things that are used to attract customers and are not considered riba. Now, this is an important issue. People who work in companies that deal with riba, what should they do in this case? There's two types of business. If there's one, there's a company whose core business is riba. Say he works in a bank. A person who works in a bank, he's not allowed to stay in this business, but he has to immediately start searching for a new job. But he's allowed to stay in the bank for as long as it takes him to find a new job. This is a rukhsa, that he's allowed to stay there because it would create great hardship if he had to leave immediately. But he should immediately start looking for a new job. And when he finds a new job, he can get out of his haram, the haram job that he's in. But he doesn't have to leave immediately and leave his family without any source of income. He's given that time frame to try to make up, to try to find a new job, and then he can get out of his old job. And this applies to all types of businesses that are not permissible. And but if the company, they deal with riba, say Walmart again, they're dealing with riba, but that's not their core business, then there's no sin in working in that company, as long as you're not the accountant or you're not dealing in riba personally. And it's better to avoid it, but there's no sin on you as long as you're not directly involved with the riba. And finally, last subject for today is the student loans. And the student loans, when you go to college, there's two types of student loans. There's a subsidized student loan, which the government helps, and it's given on a need-based type of loan. And this type of loan, there's no interest on it. And the interest, and you're given a six-month grace period after you graduate, and after that, the interest begins. So this type of loan is allowed because there's no interest on it. However, if a person does not pay it off after they graduate within that period, then that loan converts into a riba-based loan. And at that point, it becomes haram to have that type of loan. The other type of loan is what's the unsubsidized loan, which is just a regular loan. And this is not allowed because the interest starts from the moment you take the money. And so this person, they're not allowed to have that. In the ulama, they say that the need, there's not enough need or enough darura for a student to take the riba-based loan. because studying in a university is not a necessity of life, and which would permit such a sin as riba. And they can also search for riba. They can search for these subsidized loan or scholarships and other types of funding. And I actually personally, when I went to college, I wrote to the financial aid board and I said, I can't take riba, you know, and can you give me some alternative? And they actually helped me to give me other types of funding, grants and things like that, in order to get out of taking the riba-based loan. Yes, Brenda? So, going to medical school is a necessity? Right. I don't know of any fatwa that allow it. I don't know of any ulama that allowed it. But a person, he could search out for a reputable and knowledgeable scholar and ask him what his opinion is and then follow that, inshallah. Allah knows best, inshallah. And to conclude, inshallah, you've been very patient, may Allah reward you. Most of the contemporary transactions or loans that are out there, they're usurious. This is called riba jahiliyyah. And we have to make an effort for the sake of Allah to avoid that while living in the West to meet the needs of our faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and our obedience to Him, to follow the Sharia. So our responsibility now that we've learned, inshallah, is to try to teach others and practice it. Inshallah, and Allah, I'll close with one very beautiful hadith. The Prophet said, "Man taraka shay'an lillah, abdanahu khayran minhu." Whoever gives up anything for the sake of Allah, Allah will replace it with something better. Allah will replace him with something better. And I know many stories, and I can tell you many, many stories of people. Just one example is in Michigan. Some brothers were doctors, and they wanted to. They have malpractice insurance, but they didn't want to get involved because we didn't talk about insurance. But most scholars, they consider commercial insurance to be something haram if it's not necessity. So they pooled their funds together, and they said, all these group of doctors, whatever we were going to pay for insurance, we'll just pool our funds as a type of sadaqah. They gave it as sadaqah in a fund. And after 3 years, there was no lawsuits, alhamdulillah, and they had a lot of money at that time. They built an Islamic school with that money. And, you know, Allah protected them from many lawsuits. So when people give up something for the sake of Allah, Allah will replace it with something better, inshallah. So we'll finish here, inshallah, and we ask Allah to give us the beneficial knowledge and help us to follow it. Show us the truth and avoid and follow it, and show us falsehood as falsehood and stay away from it, and give us much fiqh and understanding of the religion. And if there's any questions, inshallah, we'll be happy to take them. And also, sisters, if you have any, you're welcome. Or are you all tired out? No more. Yes,
can you briefly comment, maybe it's not the topic of today's talk, can you briefly comment on car insurance?
Right, the car insurance is required, right, by law. So, you know, that's something you can't avoid.
Life insurance and insurance,
right, right. Commercial insurance, the scholars, they say that commercial insurance is not allowed because it involves a type of gambling and riba and dealing in the unknown, and there's a lot of ghara, which means unknown things that are unknown. So generally speaking, it's not allowed. Inshallah. Any other last questions? Yes, one that's fine. You're putting the money in the savings account with the intention of not benefiting or using the interest for some other cause, it's not allowed. Because you're approving of the interest-based contract. You shouldn't approve of it yet. We're not allowed to even get involved with that type of contract. So even approving of it is not allowed. A person should stay out of it in the first place. They shouldn't even get involved with it in the first place.
But if you put the money in the bank will use it for that.
Right, right. But you're approving of a riba-based contract. You know, even witnessing it, or writing it down, or being one of the two parties taking it or giving it, it's all haram. So you have to stay away from the haram as much as you can.
The money in the bank?
The best thing is if you can find an Islamic bank.
Suppose like in India there is no Islamic bank.
Right.
That's the practical.
This is the darura. They say you're forced to put the money in the haram bank. You put it in, but you put it in an account that doesn't have interest. This is what we're supposed to do. Inshallah. JazakAllah khair. Any other last questions? Yes, Brother Ismail. Yes.
Does it involve riba in returning library books?
Right. Remember we talked about the categories of riba in the beginning? Oh, returning a library book late. Returning a library book late. Does this involve riba? Well, this is a late fee, right? It's just, it's not, it's because it's a type of punishment for doing something late, I guess, right? Allahu Alam. It's more like a penalty, I think. It's not like a fee for, you know, based on, you know, making profit, but it's supposed to penalize you. You know, so Allahu Alam, Allah knows best. JazakAllah khair. Any other questions? Sisters, do you have any questions? Inshallah. خير إن شاء الله جزاكم الله خير وصلى الله على محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم والحمد لله رب العالمين بارك الله فيكم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته